Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now walk about six blocks west from Sylvia's. Down 125th Street, you come to a corner where the One train roars by overhead. To your left is a housing project called Grant Houses. To your right is another called Manhattanville. Staff writer Jennifer Gonerman spent time there this year for a story that was called A Daughter's Death. Thanks for coming in, Jennifer. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the story and what was happening in Harlem when you were reporting?
Sure. The story is about a young woman named Tayshauna Murphy. Her friends and family called her Chicken. She was very well known. She was a high school basketball star. She was killed on September 11th, 2011. And in the 4 years since, her father, Talon Murphy, has become a regular presence in this neighborhood in West Harlem. I think partly it makes him feel connected to his daughter. He meets and greets all her friends. He knows just about everybody. He tries to diffuse any conflicts. He actually calls himself a street social worker.
Okay, right now we're on Old Broadway. This is where the fighting used to occur, and young people would come from Grand and throw bottles at young people from Manhattanville and vice versa. And this is like a place where it kind of all started from 40-something years ago, you know. So now we're using this place as, you know, a place where we can defuse a lot of things that's been going on in the last 40 years. So that's the significance of right here.
Where did Chicken live in Grant?
Well, we, Tayshauna and her mother, her brothers, lived on the 15th floor in 3170. This is the building that's facing you right now. They moved here in 2007 from Queens, you know, looking for, I guess, a better life. We didn't actually know at that time that it was an off-and-on rivalry between these two housing developments. What's up, man? How you? I'm all right. Last time I saw my daughter was actually on this bench right here. She's wearing a red hood, a blue Yankee hat. I just got word that a scout from the University of Tennessee was going to come and look at her play because she was going into her senior year of high school. And I walked by her right here and said to her, listen, I got to talk to you. I need you to come upstairs. And all I remember is me going upstairs, going to sleep. Next thing I know, my son ran into the door with a friend of his and said that Tayshauna had been shot. And she was actually chased into this door right here, this open door, and chased up the stairs. She had a chronic asthma to be such a great athlete. And she was chased right up into this building and chased to the fourth floor, and she couldn't go any further. She was shot three times and killed. Right now, you see over here, they still have candles up.
Let's go see.
Yeah, they still have the candles up. Every year, the young men in the neighborhood do a little memorial for. So this is like part of the memorial that they do every year. And every year, I actually go upstairs on the fourth floor. I light a candle here. And then I go upstairs and I light a candle on the fourth floor.
Well, I'm impressed that it's been 4 years and we're seeing 25, 30 candles lit for her. I mean, 4 years is a long time in the life of a teenager.
Tayshauna was so well-loved, man. I mean, I think about it. Yesterday would make 4 years from the wake. And, you know, it's something that you wouldn't even believe. It was thousands of people that came out from all five boroughs. I was striving to get the young people to understand that nothing that they would do would bring Tayshauna back. You know, you being angry is not going to bring her back. So, I mean, there was times you had maybe like 10 or 11 guys in the street ready to come over here, you know, angry about what happened. And I had to kind of like stand in the middle of that, you know. And I've been standing in the middle of that for from then till now.
To listen to this father so calmly, and yet there's something incredibly lost about him. I don't know how to explain it. Does he have any sense of why his daughter was killed?
Her death was part of this ongoing rivalry. There's been a lot of tensions between the two projects, between Manhattanville and Grant Houses, that goes back decades. Mm-hmm. She was killed by two young men who were affiliated with Manhattanville Houses. They're now both in prison doing 25 to life. Her murder actually inflamed tensions and kept the feud alive.
What's the stakes? What is the feud over?
You know, nobody really seems to know. It's not about drugs or money. Probably has more to do with turf, status, identity, even boredom. And the craziest part about the whole thing is that these two housing projects are so close to one another. They're just separated by a single block.
Oh, where we going now? I mean, I'm going to take a walk through Manhattanville. I'm welcome over there. Since I've been doing the community work, I remember when this first happened, I actually walked with a group of men right in front of this building because one of the young men lived in this building, 545. And I actually told the young people that I loved them. And people were really drawn back by that. They was like, well, how can you love the people that actually had something to do with killing your daughter? I just think that some of these young people are just misguided, you know, and they need that special attention. And they need the attention from people that can connect with them, you know. And I just happen to be somebody that has a connection with them. So right now we're walking across 125th Street, which is actually like the medium of the battle zone, so to speak, at one time. So
it sounds like the feud was off and on over the decades. What do you think was fueling it? Why would, you know, to outsiders it might make no sense?
I think what was fueling it actually is the inability of the adults to actually step in and be adults. When you have this this ideology that it's us against them, and it's I'm from Grant and you're from Manhattanville, instead of saying that we're all people in the same community, and you put imaginary barrier up in your mind and say, well, I can't go over there because they're from Grant, or I can't hang out with him because he's from another place, or they might have been looking at it like, oh, well, this is just kids stuff. But in all actuality, it's not, because in these neighborhoods, violence is manufactured. It's manufactured through poverty. Now, when I say poverty, poverty means a lot of things. It's not just economic. You know, poverty is poor resources, poor outreach, poor parenting, poor mental health, poor services. You can have, you know, because everything has to work hand in hand. You know, I'm a stickler on connecting the dots. Monica's here.
Monica Casaberry.
Monica's son. When was Jamal killed?
Saturday. It'd be 4 years, September 19th,
2011. It was 8 days after Tayshaun.
Yeah, 8 days after, yes.
8 days after Tayshaun. She's actually part of our parent response team. You know, we partners. We partners because we carrying the same load.
How did you meet Taylon Murphy?
I met Taylon, matter of fact, a few days after, or maybe a week after my son was murdered. We met up at some march. I noticed that, I don't know, his persona, his aura, people are flocked to him, even the children.
What do you think it is that draws
compassion, dedication. He's a dedicated individual.
I remember you telling me once that you would talk to each other late at night on the telephone. How late at night?
2, 3, 4 morning, didn't matter. And he would pick up his phone, he'll speak.
And at 2, 3, 4 in the morning, what were you guys talking about?
How we feel, we were venting, you know, how angry we may be at that time, you know, what's going on with our cases at that particular time and moment. It's a clique of us that does, you know, that does that as far as parents. We go out to maybe a crime scene, God forbid someone's shot. We go to help, you know, a parent who has lost. We sit with them at the hospitals. We help them with funeral arrangements. It's just you need that support. And a lot of people are there while the cameras are there. But after the cameras are gone, you see nobody. We're not like that. We're there from the beginning to the end, and we're going to keep on even after the fact. So that's what we do.
I should tell you that actually Monica is not from Harlem. Her son, Jamal Singleton, was actually killed in Brooklyn.
You know, all the same, I listen to this, and the normal tones in their voice, his daughter was killed, her son. Are there people like Talon around the city that do this kind of work in any concerted way?
Well, in the course of reporting the story, I met a number of his friends, and in the 4 years since his daughter was killed, he's recruited a number of other parents from around the city who have also lost their children, and they all work together to try to help other parents. And here in West Harlem, they took over an abandoned social club, which is really still a bit of a wreck. I mean, there's no sign, there's holes in the ceiling, there's no windows, no bathroom. It's still got junk inside from the prior tenant. But the hope is that they can renovate the place and transform it into a crisis management center for the community. I mean, I remember the first time I walked in this place. You couldn't step in because the smell was overwhelming.
The stench was incredible. The smell smelled like Caucasus. It was just disgusting in here.
And this is a place that you fought for a year or two to get access to.
Actually.
And now you're paying how much rent for this place?
Oh, man, we pay $1,400 a rent.
What do you think it would take to make this storefront really work?
We've got a quote. I think we had one or two contractors come in, but I remember one of the quotes was like $47,000.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we've been doing good because we've been starting to get different donations, tables, chairs, juices for the young people, water, chess, chalk.
If I come back and see you in 5 years and walk into the storefront, which now is just sort of full of junk and the walls bare and the ceiling sort of caving in, what do you think I'd see if I come back in 5 years?
I see a wall full of computers. I vision about 20 young people being in here just working on different things, whether it be resumes, getting ready for work, or, you know, online classes, whether it be GED or college classes. I could see us having one of these tables outside and actually doing some arts and crafts on a nice day with the younger children, or maybe even playing chess. I mean, that's my vision, and I could see it happening here.
I think one of the things that I really learned from spending time with you was what it feels like, the intense concentration of homicides in the city. So even though the homicide numbers aren't that high there, last year they're actually the lowest they've ever been in New York City history, that's not much solace to anybody who lost a kid. And it seems like pretty often when somebody is killed in New York City, you've got a connection to them. They're a friend of a friend, somebody knows them.
I think that happens for a couple of reasons. I think, number one, a lot of these murders or, you know, crimes against the community are only happening in certain designated areas.
You know, almost 20% of the shootings in the city happen in the projects, which is only about 5% of the city's population. Tell us about Jahab Marshall.
Oh, man. I mean, Jahab Marshall, I got that phone call. He was a young man that actually grew up with my daughter. He wasn't into anything, any criminal acts. He wanted to be a chef. He used to do hip-hop or rap music. And I got a call saying that there was a shooting in Queensbridge, and a bunch of young men were shooting at each other or shooting in the courtyard, and he accidentally got shot. He wasn't the intended target. And Jahad's death, like a lot of these young people's death, really affected me because he was a young man that called me his uncle. And he was a young man that ever since my daughter died, he was always wanted to show me that he wanted to get out. He wanted to get out of the neighborhood. He wanted to do something positive, and he also wanted to give back.
Wasn't he at the picnic in May that you held for chicken?
Yeah, he actually was at the picnic. Every year I do a big picnic on Queensbridge, which actually Queensbridge is the biggest housing development in the country. I was actually born there. And Jahad has been to the picnic every year since chicken had passed.
And this is the picnic marking her birthday, right? So this year was for her 22nd birthday, and it wasn't that long afterwards, right, that you got the phone call?
Yeah, it wasn't that long afterwards. So, that struck me. I took that kind of hard. I actually went out to see his mother, consoled his father. I actually put together a walk showing our disapproval to the violence, you know.
Are you still wearing chicken's picture around your neck? What do you have on?
I still wear the laminate. Still wear the picture around my neck. I wear these beads.
You got chicken's name on and beads on your necklace and bracelet.
And also I wear these laminates. You know, these are actually from the wake.
So you've got two on gold chains around your neck, pictures, right. Laminated pictures of chicken.
Yeah, I wear them every day. I look at them as being my yoke. I've been wearing these every day for 4 years.
And when are they going to come off, do you think?
I think they'll come off when we actually get this place fully operating. I think I'll pull them off and hang them up in the storefront.
That's Talon Murphy talking with staff writer Jennifer Gonerman on Old Broadway in Harlem. I'm David Remnick, and this is the New Yorker Radio Hour.